They did something wonky, and I didn't realize they did something wonky. They made the semester 1 week shorter than it was last year. So once we get by exam three, we're not going to have many classes left. So you're going to have to watch some videos because we've got to cover the content and all the stuff that's on the final. So I may make new ones. I may use some of the ones that I have archived. But you're definitely going to have to watch your way through the French Revolution. And you might have to do the agricultural and the industrial revolution. Because I think what I want to do is I think I want to talk about the scientific revolution, the Enlightenment, and the American Revolution. And why do I want to talk about those? Well, because I enjoy those. And at the end of the day, I suppose I get to decide what I talk about. But once we're done with this and we keep going forward, we'll narrow everything down. Also, don't forget that your final exam is the Wednesday final. So that would be the 10th, December 10th. Don't want to hear any excuses. Oh, I'm going home, I'm not going to be here. Then you're going to get a zero. Because your final exam will be in person. So make sure you plan accordingly. Then the 11th. Actually, yeah, you're right, because 13th is the Friday. You are right, I am wrong. But I had the day right, and I think we're scheduled for 11 to 1, but it's not going to be any longer than the exams you've taken. The only difference is you're going to have to do it on paper. And I get to sit and watch you take exams, and I get to see the smoke coming out of your ears. As you're sitting there like, oh shit, I actually needed to know this stuff.
Professor, do we get to have notes?
No. No, you do not. So you're going to actually have to study, my friend. All right. Yeah, I know. Oh, wait, I'll go to college and I actually have to study. I can't cheat. Oh, man. Man. It is a harsh world. All right. So where the heck am I? Parliament, Bishop's War, Person Rule. All right. So we build the idea of absolutism. There we go, because he literally wrote the book. We did Divine Right of Kings. We did absolutism. All right, any questions about any of that? Well, I dig out the attendance sheet. Are we missing anybody that doesn't have perfect attendance or has perfect attendance? Get that number down.
This is the guy in my essay,
though. Who?
James.
How are you doing, James?
Well, particularly him and witches.
Oh, all right.
Demonology.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. All right. John, Aaron, Wyatt, Lena, Michelle.
He's here with that.
Would he fall in?
Probably.
Yeah. Christian's here. Mikey's here. Ernest is always here. Abe is mostly here. Angie's mostly here. Angel's always here. Trinity is always here. And Whitney is now here. All right. So, we have a situation where he believed he had the right to rule by himself. He would attempt to rule by himself. Because again, as I said, when he became King of England, he wasn't a newbie, he wasn't a rookie. He had been a king for 36 years. And so he knew what he was doing. And he did everything that he could to rule by himself. But there were four times that he was forced to call Parliament into session. Now, FYI, Parliament at this time was not fully what Parliament in England is today. Parliament made law side by side with the king. So Parliament could make law and the king could enforce it. Or the king could make his own laws and the king could enforce it. But going back to Magna Carta, the one most important power that Parliament possessed was power over the purse. Parliament had control over all tax law, taxing and spending. But what the kings would do is they would call Parliament into session whenever they needed money. So it's not like Parliament today where it sits full time. They would only open up a session if they were called to London by the king. And then they would stay as long as they needed to conduct the business, and then they would go home. So there literally could be years in between. So long story short, during James's 20 plus years of rule, he only called Parliament four times. But each one was because of money. Because just like United States for the last 4 years, England was suffering from creeping inflation. So what was happening is as prices increased and the value of money decreased, it impacted people's spending power, particularly the crown. And by the way, James, I give him lots of credit, but one of his biggest areas of dunderheadness was the fact that he didn't know how to manage a budget. He had complete financial incompetence. So he just spent and spent and spent and spent, not realizing that if you spend money, you have to pay for things, you know, when the bill comes due. So most of the inflation was because of him. But what did he do? He called Parliament in and he had Parliament raise taxes, thus he could get more money and continue to spend. Now, in terms of foreign policy, give him all the credit in the world. He was very adept in dealing with the issues that were developing on the continent. For example, one of his primary accomplishments, he actually ended the long war that England had been fighting with Spain. Brought that to an end. He also ended the acts of privateers against the Spanish. Why? Because he knew that that was one of the triggers that led to the Spanish Armada. Because Elizabeth had been, you know, granting licenses to these pirates. He also was an expansionist. It was during his reign that Jamestown was founded. That Plymouth was founded here in North America. And when the 30 Years' War erupted, even though it involved his son-in-law, he managed to stay out. The only aid at times that he gave was some money, but he didn't send English troops over there. And most of the money he gave was for foodstuffs. He also was wicked smart, really intelligent. He was a huge patron of literature. Ironically, when he was on the throne, this is when William Shakespeare was alive, writing his greatest plays. James actually funded the construction of the theater where most of Shakespeare's plays were performed, right along the River Thames. His prime minister, when we talk about the scientific revolution, Lord Francis Bacon, developed the methodology for scientific inquiry. But hands down, the most important thing that happened during his reign was literally the King James Bible was written. It was first published in 1611. this would become the official Bible of the Church of England. This was the third translation in English of the Bible. The first being Wycliffe's, the second being a translation of Erasmus's Textus Receptus. But this would be the official one. And interestingly enough, it overemphasized all of the points in Scripture where it was referenced that kings are chosen by God to rule over God's earthly kingdom. And simultaneously, it de-emphasized the need for an institutional hierarchical church. Questions? I would have liked to finish this the other day, but we know we ran out of time. Questions? Alrighty. So, unfortunately, even though he was a good king, March 1625, he died. And I hate to break it to y'all, but you're all going to die too one day. And hopefully for you, it's after a long, happy life. But death is inevitable, kind of like taxes. But fortunately, James did the one thing that every good king should do. He had an heir. So the dynasty was secured. He would be succeeded by his second son, Charles. Now, ironically, there were many historians that made comparisons between James I and Henry VII. Similarly, there are many historians that made comparisons to Henry VIII and Charles I. Like Henry, Charles was not supposed to be the heir. He was the second son. His older brother, Henry, died in 1612, making him, by default, the heir. Now, unlike his brother, Henry, who was born and was into his teenage years while they were still in Scotland, Charles had actually came to his teenage years in England. So his perspective on the world was different. It wasn't like his father and his older brother, that they're Scots that were invited to England. But he's like, no, I'm English. Even though that wasn't the case. Unfortunately, whereas his father was held in wide regard by the people of England, when he was crowned king, the day he was crowned, he already was unpopular. The reason being, he had a tendency not to think with this, but to think with the other part of a man's body that oftentimes can get dudes into trouble. He, as part of the negotiations between his father and Spain, was betrothed to Maria Anna, who was the daughter of Philip III. The reason being, that's what you did if you were the king. If you had a kid, you made a political connection with another king to end hostilities. But Charles did something really bizarre. He, when he became of age, had never met once Maria Anna. They had never seen one another. So what he decides to do is he sneaks out of London, stows away on a ship dressed as like a commoner, sails down to Spain, somehow makes his way into the palace of Philip III, and into the bedchambers of Maria Anna. And then he saw her. And he was like, If you know anything about the Habsburgs, they did lots of inbreeding. So they had very weird, one of the most famous features is the Habsburg chin. So he wasn't necessarily enthralled. And to make matters worse, Spain wanted Charles to convert to Roman Catholicism and to essentially undo all of the things going back to Elizabeth's reign that allowed Protestants and Catholics to live side by side. So in other words, he really wasn't a crusader. He wasn't into this. So he broke off the marriage. Said, I'm not getting married to this chick. But on his way back to London, he makes a pit stop in France. Somehow gets into the court of Henri IV and sees one of his daughters, Henrietta Maria, who was a hottie, even by today's standards. And instead of thinking with this, thinks with this. And he proposes to her. Well, here's the thing. Dad was good trying to make peace with Spain, but now guess who's pissed? When they learn, because remember the 30 Years' War? Which side were the French on? Were they on the side of the Habsburgs or were they on the side of the Protestants?
Protestants.
So even though France was the Catholic nation, they're siding with the enemies of the Habsburgs. So now this proposal of linking England and Spain is blown up, and Philip III is outraged. So now suddenly, England's on the verge of going to war with Spain again, because he chose Henrietta. And then, besides the fact that he wasn't popular when he became king, he only made it worse. He constantly butted heads with Parliament, leaders of Parliament. For instance, he called Parliament into session because he decided he wanted to join the 30 Years' War, but only against France. So he's got Spain at him, mad at him, and now he wants to attack the country of his father-in-law. Because he started dreaming, oh, maybe we can get some of the English lands back that the English lost, going back to the Hundred Years' War. Well, Parliament's like, dude, we dealt with that 300 years ago. We've moved on. So what do? Well, they allow Parliament just to send money, more money, to help out the Protestants. And again, just like when his dad was on the throne, mostly foodstuffs. Charles also wants to unleash privateers again on the Spanish. And Parliament basically says, yeah, we'll provide licensing, but we're not going to give any money for it. So if there's a privateer who actually has his own ship, we may give him a license, but we're not going to buy the ships for him. So every attempt, he wants to be aggressive. He wants to be this war leader. And Parliament's like, no. And as if that wasn't bad enough, oh my God, to say that he believed in absolutism and divine rights of kings, well, that's an understatement. Where his father made the book, he wanted to put the practice into action. He wanted to possibly get rid of Parliament and rule by dictate, like
Augustus in Rome. But here's the problem. And we're going to see this when we talk about France. In order to be an absolute monarch, to have full control of everything in your country, you need three things. You need three things. The most obvious one is money. To be an absolute ruler, you have to have lots of money. Because what are you going to use that money for? To maintain power. What do you have to buy lots of?
Soldiers.
Soldiers. So the second thing, to be an absolute king, you have to have a standing army. And now the third one's probably going to be bizarre. Society has to accept it. You have to have a social basis. Because at the end of the day, if most of the people in the country go along with something, is that not going to be the rule? If most of the people, and we're not saying whether it's good or whether it's bad, what's right and wrong, we're just saying if most of the people in a country are for something, is that not kind of what the government does? Whatever most of the people want? Well, Charles had none of those. He had no money, he had no standing army, and he was not popular with the people. And then, to make matters worse, like if this wasn't bad enough, he starts engaging in religious issues. In particular, he hates Elizabeth's toleration that has allowed Calvinism to creep more and more into England. Calvinism was already strong in Scotland. Those are the Presbyterians. But it slowly began making its way into England. And he wanted to stop it. Why? Well, two reasons. The first, on a spiritual level, he rejected the idea of predestination. Completely rejected the idea of predestination. He thought it was silly. What? We're supposed to allow someone to do whatever they want just because maybe they're successful and they're going to turn around and claim, well, I'm successful because God loves me, so therefore I must be elect, so therefore give me power? And he goes, that makes no sense. No, he actually took the Catholic approach. The belief in free will. No. You decide. Are you going to go up or are you going to go down? Based upon the decisions you make in life. I mean, after all, if you're going to be a rapist, if you're going to be a murderer, you're going to be a druggie, how do you find yourself in those positions? It's your choice. You decide. By the way, that's one of the reasons why I reject whenever I hear people saying, well, it's not my fault. Yeah, no matter what position you're in it because of decisions you made. And if you didn't want to be in that position, you should have followed the advice that I gave my kids. Don't be dumb. It works for everything. Just don't be dumb. So, he rejects the core of Calvinism. And he also rejects the structure of Calvinism. Calvinism embraces Presbyterianism, which is bottom-up church.
Presbyterianism. It's bottom-up church. It's belief that the congregation controls the focus of the faith. Versus Episcopalian, which is top-down control. He believed that there needs to be some type of institutional structure. Because the average person doesn't have the background to accurately interpret scripture. Okay, all of the Protestants believe read the Bible for yourself. That's great. But just because you read the Bible, do you actually know what it means? No, Charles says, no, you need someone to help you interpret it. So you need a hierarchy. Doesn't mean there's a pope. Doesn't mean there's cardinals. But there definitely has to be some type of structure behind it. As a result, rumors started spreading around that Charles was actually a Catholic. And then in the midst of all of this, he does two things that were, to use my phrase, wicked stupid. He was dumb. The first, he creates an inquisition. Known historically as the Star Chamber. Now, FYI, the Star Chamber was named because it was a special court that met in a room in the palace that the wood ceiling had an ornamental star pattern on it. But what took place in the Star Chamber was courts, like a court. But originally, what the Star Chamber used to do was kind of make sure all judges were doing their job fairly. So it was a useful tool, like a check and balance. But when James became king, he packed it and used it for ideological purposes. In other words, they investigated things that he didn't like. So instead of making the judges are being fair and following the law, now it's whatever the king wants. And you know what he wanted? To force his beliefs upon all the people. Because if you go against the king in his mind, you're going against God. Questions? This was dumb, because now he's going to stoke up religion. Because guess who he's going to start attacking? Calvinists. Then the second mistake he made, just 5 years into his rule, he declared that Parliament would no longer be necessary. He formally declared that Parliament is disbanded. Now, by the way, the reason why he disbanded it, well, he tried using his power as king to start raising taxes. And Parliament sat back and said, no, 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 Magna Carta. We control the purse strings. And so the king said, go home. So now he has his own inquisition. And now
He's making decisions for himself.
From 1629 all the way until 1640, historically speaking, England enters the period referred to as his personal rule.
This is the only time in the history of England, predating the Norman conquest in 1066, when the king had all of the powers of the state. He made the law, he enforces the law, and he personally controls the courts. He is, in effect, an absolute monarch that doesn't have an army, that doesn't have money, and is not supported by the people. Questions? But wait, how did he get money? Well, he was clever. He went through all of the laws of England that were on the book. So, and he discovered something that dates back to the Hundred Years' War. See, when Edward III launched his war to claim the French throne in 1337, he needed to make sure that everywhere in England was contributing to the war effort. And one of the things that he needed were lots of ships. Because in order for the English king and the English army to fight in France, you needed to be able to cross the English Channel. There was no channel then. So, with Parliament, they passed a law that required all ports to either provide to the king ships or the equal value in cash to a ship. So the king could then take the money and buy the ship from another port. This essentially was to allow him to have a fleet. Well, Charles finds this on the books and says, well, I don't need any ships. I'm not going anywhere, but I'll take the money. And he expanded it. So that way, not only the port cities, but every single major urban center in England had to contribute money directly to the king that he could use for whatever he wanted. The defense of the realm. Questions? All right. Well, all the way up until 1640, everything was fine. He was making enough money to cover government expenses. He was better with money than his father was, so he wasn't like building huge palaces and all the rest. But he could get by comfortably. He could hire some soldiers. And so long as there was the status quo, there never would be any problem. But of course, as we know, life is never the status quo. Life has a way of effing with you right when you least expect it. It's called the curveball. Because if you're talking about a government, there's nothing more expensive than a war. And stupid Charles triggers a war known as the Bishop's War. Actually, there was two wars back to back.
Long story short, the Bishop's War was an uprising by the Scots because Charles attempted to force the Scottish via the Star Chamber to adopt Anglicanism. to get rid of their bottom-up churches and replace them with top-down churches. Because under the laws of England, who's in charge of the Church of England?
The king.
The king is. Well, the Scots were infuriated by this. So when the king started sending agents to arrest people and drag them down to the Star Chamber, the Scots simply rose up, built an army, and invaded across the border. Yes?
At that time, did the Scots have like a king?
He was their king, but they had their own parliament. Just like when his dad was king. So he was a king of both countries at the same time. So the Scots are basically going to war against their king. Well, I don't know if you know anything about the Scots, but they are fierce warriors. And when their independence is infringed upon, they get violent. So they invade England, they start attacking towns, pushing back against the king. The king sends an army up there to deal with the Scots, and the Scots butcher them. But the problem is he only had enough money to buy one army. And with the army destroyed, there's nothing to stop the Scots from marching all the way south. So he gets desperate. And he's forced to bring back Parliament because he needs money to buy another army. Parliament had not met in 11 years. And Parliament was aware of everything that the king was doing. And let's just say Parliament was not pleased. But this Parliament, session of Parliament, would not last. In fact, historically, it's known as the Short Parliament because it was the shortest session of Parliament ever. It didn't even last a full month. So, the king calls Parliament, says, Parliament, give me money. I need to raise more soldiers so I can drive the Scots back into Scotland. Parliament says, sorry, Your Majesty, you're the one who created this. Dumbass. Maybe we'll give you some money. But we need a little quid pro quo. MPs, members of Parliament. They decided not just to give the king money, but rather they sought to put strings on the money. And they started demanding that the king recognize certain rights. Such as Magna Carta. Hello? Since 1215. Power of taxing and spending. All taxing and spending has been with Parliament. They wanted the king to acknowledge that. They also didn't like this Star Chamber thing. So they demanded trial by jury. If you're going to accuse someone of a crime, they have a right to a jury trial. Not this Star Chamber thing. And lastly, they also demanded one of the most important rights that we have in our court system. Habeas corpus. Which is what? Trinity. To do what?
To make someone else, like, do.
No. No?
A judge.
Oh, there you go. I knew I'd get it out of you. She's my con law class. Habeas corpus is the right to appear before a judge. So if you're accused of a crime and you're incarcerated, if you submit a writ of habeas corpus, you're asking for a judge to order you to come before his or her court. Because if you go before a judge, what can that judge do to you? If you were previously in a state of incarceration, maybe they could send you back to jail, or what else could the judge do? The judge could let you go. Because guess what used to happen back in England? You'd get locked up in the Tower of London, and you could be locked up there for decades. I went to the Tower of London. It's all cleaned up now because it's a museum. But I couldn't imagine wanting to live in there as a prison for decades. So members of parliament are like, look, you as your king, your majesty, you should not have a right to basically declare anybody an enemy and then lock them up and throw away the key. Well, let's just say Charles was like, too bad. I'm not dealing with this. I'm not compromising. And he sends them home. Questions? Thought there was one more click. Questions? Well, here's the funny thing. Word spreads that Charles would not work with Parliament and that Parliament did not raise any funds to be used to raise an army. So guess who takes advantage of it? Scotland's like, oh yeah, well you can't do anything to us. Well, we're going to be independent now. We're breaking away. And we are not going to recognize you, Charles, as our king. And right after they did that, they organized a second Scottish army and invaded England on the other coast side. So now there's two Scottish armies raising havoc in England.
Yeah, so as at that time, was William Wallace still alive?
William Wallace was a couple of hundred years before. Other questions? That was a good reference. I like that. That was good. Braveheart. Well, here's the thing. There's nothing that Charles can do about it. So, to get the Scottish armies home and to try to negotiate a settlement, the king was forced to accept the Treaty of Ripon. Under the Treaty of Ripon, Charles would still be the King of Scotland, but Scotland would no longer submit to the English Parliament. So to put it in other ways, no English law has any effect in Scotland. Charles is now a puppet head. He's just a figure. He has no power over Scotland. He's still technically the king. But the Scottish Parliament has all full autonomy. And two, England had to pay for all of the damage, all of the war costs. Because, by the way, that's how wars used to end. There never was a period in time when you go fight a war with a country, kick the living snot out of them, and then you seek to rebuild them. No. The way it always was if you kick the living snot out of a country, you basically make the loser pay. But this puts Charles in an interesting predicament, because what does he not have?
Money.
How can he pay for this agreement? So you know what he's forced to do? He's forced to call Parliament back. And by the way, when Parliament reconvenes at the end of 1640, they would remain in session nonstop all the way up until 1660. The Short Parliament is called the Short Parliament because that was the shortest session in English history. Guess why they call this session the longest? Because it was the longest session. All right, and what does this session do? Well, they immediately go to work. They start passing laws, and the king is forced to accept them. One of the first acts that they passed was called the Triennial Act. While today, Parliament meets full-time year-round, what this law would do was guarantee that at a minimum, Parliament would have to meet 3 times a year. Although during the Long Parliament, they never adjourned. They stayed in session. They also passed a law that would abolish the Star Chamber. They also asserted full control over the power of the purse. So they got rid of ship money and all of the other feudal taxes that were still on the books.
So they ended the power of the purse?
No, they reclaimed the power of the purse. So now, no more ship money, no more other feudal taxes, so the king essentially would become financially dependent on Parliament. And here's the funny thing. All of these laws, the crown agreed to. Charles signs them all, so they all go into effect. But the moment you start giving in to people and giving them a little more rights, they start asking for more and more. Because really, Parliament realized that they had the king in between a rock and a hard place. He needed them way more than they needed him. So they began to push the envelope. And they did 2 things that would trigger a civil war. The first, in 1641, was the passage of what's known as the Grand Remonstrance. The Grand Remonstrance. This was a bill, it never became a law. But what this bill was a list of 208 grievances, complaints, about what took place during the 11 years of personal rule. Now, here's the amazing thing. They never once blamed the king directly for any of the complaints. But instead, Parliament blamed it on all of the king's advisors. So it wasn't the king's fault, it was all his advisors. But the problem was, is in those who were accused, was the queen. And by the way, that's what impeach means. If you are impeached, you are accused. So Parliament impeached the queen, claiming she gave him bad advice. Well, I hate to break it to you, ladies and gentlemen, but if you were to accuse my wife of wrongdoing, that would be an act of war in my book. Especially if she was a queen, because my wife is a queen, Mrs. Professor Lanark. And the other thing that they did was pass another bill. Not a law, a bill. And what this bill would do was change the way England raised armies. To make it quick, I'm going to go over a minute or two because I want to finish this. What this law did was it was an attempt to seize control over the way armies of mustered from the crown and take it into the hands of Parliament. Traditionally, the crown would put out a call, and all across the English countryside, local militias would be raised. So the king would send word to certain counties, and the counties would have to muster a certain amount of troops. Well, what this law did was give the power to muster to Parliament. It also took from the king the power to name generals, which would essentially mean now the king can't call the army to defend the land. No, it's going to be Parliament. Well, long story short, this bill would be dead on arrival too. I'll give you the last two clicks. When Charles found out which members of Parliament were the ones responsible for these bills, he did something that had never happened before in the history of England. He gathered soldiers, marched to Parliament, barged into the meeting hall for the House of Commons, and sought to arrest 10 men, the ringleaders. But the problem is his word had already got out, and so the ringleaders slipped out the back. Well, when word spread throughout London what the king had done, the church bells started ringing, and people took to the streets and declared an open rebellion against the king for him violating the sacred house of the people. And when that occurred, the king was forced to flee. And as we're going to see when we come back on Wednesday, England would descend into a civil war. Questions? Papers are due on Friday.